welcome to Dialogue on Teaching, Wabash Center's podcast series. I am Nancy Lynn Westfield, director of the Wabash Center. Paul Myrie and Paul Utterback are our sound engineers. It is my pleasure to welcome to the conversation Dr. Angela Parker. Dr. Parker is Associate Professor of New Testament and Greek with Mercer University's McAfee School of Theology. Welcome, Dr. Parker, to the conversation.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be in conversation with Wabash, and particularly you, Dr. Westfield. You are a legend in your own right, and I thank you for your work.
Thank you.
You are.
Thank you. Now, there is, as we begin this conversation, there's a particular celebration. Tell the listeners about the particular celebration.
So the particular celebration is that I have been promoted to Associate Professor of New Testament and Greek, in addition to being granted tenure with my university. And the tenure, as I think about tenure, especially in the landscape of Georgia, Georgia's public institutions are constantly looking at tenure and trying to find ways to do away with tenure. But tenure is important because it allows scholars like myself to really research and say up to date and interesting things about Bible that people would not normally hear in churches. And I think that's important because people think that reading and interpreting Bible is easy, and they think that the biblical text is univocal, and having conversations about the multivocality of text out in the public land sphere is, I think, important because people just don't know that.
So we never want to take for granted a Black woman with tenure, a Black woman
yes.
with a promotion to associate scholarship. Mm-hmm. It is a small club, right?
Yeah.
And it's a club not because it is elitist. It is a club because we need each other.
Mm-hmm.
We depend on each other. And the mean streets of the academy mean we need to stick together.
Yes. And I would say that biblical scholarship has been gatekept in such a way that it tries to keep out Africana scholars. It tries to keep out anyone who's not the cishet white male. And we're still at about 75% white men in the academy, with about 25% women. And so even as you're thinking about those demographics, we're still very small.
Mm-hmm.
Very small.
That's true. Very small, and not because of a lack of interest, not because of a lack of scholarship, mm-hmm. not because of a lack of people who could and are capable of moving into these arena, but like you said, they've been gatekept with such bigotry that it's a difficult place to thrive. It's a difficult
mm-hmm.
place to flourish. So that's even a bigger celebration, Angela, for
I
your accomplishment.
That.
That's an even bigger celebration.
Thank you.
To be taken for granted, right? You know, there are times when in the academy that there's so much hierarchy
mm-hmm.
that you
mm-hmm.
you reach a plateau, you reach a place, and then you look around and you say, well, everybody's got it. It must not be a big deal. It is a big deal.
It's a big deal, right? Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes.
I've been doing little things to celebrate myself, and it's been joyous. So
I
still have to think about the big thing I want to do, because I do want to do a big thing to celebrate. And I hadn't thought about it because I wasn't allowing my mind to get there until it was actually announced and completed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I have colleagues now like yourself who were waiting because they didn't trust the system in case it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, you're not going to plan because there's always that doubt, that fear, that trepidation, because the
mm-hmm.
system is so wacky, it might not happen even when all the things line up. So it happened. The point is.
Yes. It happened. It's approved. It's sealed.
Yes. And we want the world to know. We want the
Thank
world
you.
To know. So that was actually a sidebar. That wasn't what we came
to. Yeah, I know. I appreciate that, though.
So you have a podcast yourself. We want to know about your podcast. And we also want to know just about social media in general. Like, why would a scholar of your vision for the future have a podcast? Right? So we know that you are deeply involved in research and scholarly research and biblical research. You do all the traditional scholarly things, but on top of that, you are excelling and being known for your social media prowess.
Yes,
why are you
I
going in
that.
Those directions?
It has been I think a long time coming for me to get into social media a little bit more and not be so afraid of it. I think that as a scholar, we're afraid of what it looks like to take our scholarship to the public sometimes. And what I do specifically on TikTok, I essentially talk about scripture through womanist eyes. And I think the hook for me is I love eye makeup. So I will do my eye makeup while I talk about particular biblical texts. And I'll talk about it in the context of traditional interpretations will say this, but in my scripture through womanist eyes lens, I'm reading this and I'm engaging the text in this way from the experiences of a Black woman. And what that has opened up for my particular institution and the position that I'm in has been an increase in auditors into our classes. And because we know that theological education is always in those upswings, downswings, and we are seeing decreasing enrollment across a lot of theological schools, that I think it's imperative on those of us who want to be public facing to begin to do exactly those types of activities, social media presence, in order to allow people to see that theological education is important, that how we form people in the world actually can make them better citizens of the world. And the liberal arts in general is supposed to make better citizens. I would argue that biblical scholarship, theological education, would actually make better citizens of the world who actually have an impact on public policy. We are seeing an example that we're seeing are these millstone acts that are popping up in different Republican states. The millstone acts are essentially laws that are targeting our LGBTQIA plus siblings to say that you can't be a certain, you can't be so close to a school zone, or you can't do this or that. It's limiting our LGBTQIA plus siblings. And it's based on a passage of scripture in Matthew chapter 12 that says, anyone who misleads or leads astray my children, it's better that a millstone is hung around their neck and they're cast into the sea. Mm-hmm. Well, when you read that text, the policies that are coming out and are being named after this text are complete misrepresentations and misinterpretations of the biblical text. So how do we as scholars enter into conversations that actually have impact on public policy? I think that's what's important. And that's why I'm trying to break open into these social media spaces in order to do just that.
So much of religious scholarship, biblical scholarship, acts as if the Bible and theological musings come out of the academy and are somehow given to the people, mm-hmm. right? And what you just described is the Bible is already with the people. The Bible is already in the hands of the people. The people mm-hmm. are already thinking theologically. And scholars going out, becoming public facing, actively seeking out the public, and public scholarship without thinking we have the gift, but saying what's going on in the conversation, I mm-hmm. think is a new way or a renewed way to do scholarship.
I appreciate that. I think it is. And I think it's important to also show, I remember when I was first getting a job. So my first job was in Seattle and I got my PhD from Chicago Theological Seminary. And my advisor, wonderful Xinye Yang, when I was interviewing, she was like, all right, keep your makeup neutral. Don't wear big earrings. And I'm already just, I have on big earrings, big hoops, and not neutral makeup. And so there is this persona of what a biblical scholar is supposed to be. And I remember in my master's program, you know, my professors wearing the tweed jackets with the elbow patches. Mm-hmm. And so I'm never going to be a tweed jacket elbow patch gal. I'm going to be a bold makeup, big earrings gal. And I think it's also important to allow our own personalities to come through, even as we're doing the scholarship, because theological education should be the place where many different groups of people come together, many different types, you have different interests and you have different hobbies, and you're bringing your full self, I would hope, to theological education. I want to hopefully be an example of what it means to bring my full self into these social media spaces, because then you have to contend with, oh my goodness, there's a Black woman who loves this, that, and the other, and she's talking about Bible, and you don't see that every day.
Not only That's don't you see it every day, but there, I think there's a curiosity for it, a craving for it, because the conversation is in the neighborhoods, right? The conversation
Yes.
is in the bars. The conversation is around the dinner tables.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like people are not thinking about their faith or their theology. They might not use the same words and tools that we do. But I remember as a child, we did not wait for theology to somehow find us. We were theologically thinking and biblically thinking back then.
Definitely. I think that's how, especially a lot of us as African-American or Black biblical scholars and theologians, a lot of us entered into the academy because of our roots in church. I was always gifted in being able to teach Bible, even though in some instances in my churches, I wasn't supposed to preach or quote unquote usurp authority over a man. Mm-hmm. So we entered the academy, and I'm also thinking about Renita Weems because she writes about this. A lot of us entered into the academy because the churches were not having us, but we got our theological grounding in churches and in those conversations and sitting on mommy's lap as preachers preaching and then sitting at the dinner table and asking, well, why and how come? And all those conversations that we would have as children. I was really fortunate to do a teaching in Raleigh, North Carolina, 2 weeks ago. And my parents, who are 82 and 83, were able to come and hear me preach, teach in a 300 plus predominantly white venue. All right. So I'm preaching, teaching in this white venue. And afterwards, my dad asked, you said there were going to be about 300 white folks, but I just didn't know there were going to be 300 white folks.
It's an experience, right?
It's an experience, right? Because he's old school Black Baptist deacon. So I was a DK. I wasn't a PK. I was a DK. Deacon's kid. So I got my theological education right from the knee of my parents. And it was interesting because after my teaching, she would describe herself as an old Southern lesbian. She got up and she said, aren't you proud of your daughter? And I could see their faces like, yes, we're proud, but we just didn't know it would be like this.
We didn't know it would be like this. And the point is, your scholarship does not eclipse the traditions of your church and the legacy
exactly.
of your church
mm-hmm.
and the teachings
mm-hmm.
of your church, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you did not forsake those people. You did
nope.
not, you were not ashamed of that background, right? You don't
mm-hmm.
have to go through some kind of reclaiming, right? It's all a part of you.
Exactly.
And many people have not done what you've done. Many people have said those people are superstitious, those people are wrong, those people are less than. And when I enter the academy, I'm closing the door on my own tradition because it is backwards and upside down. So I applaud you for integrating your knowledges.
I appreciate that because there's still so much richness that was placed in me from my own traditions. And so I really am appreciative of it. And even though I've massaged things and reconstructed some things, there was still good grounding there. And
so
I would think though, even our folks who are on deconstruction processes, I would hope that they're finding some ways of reconstructing, even as they say, you know, some of those things were superstitious or old school. There's still the people who formed us. Yeah.
And did a fairly good job, if I do say so myself.
Well.
But along that same thinking then, Angela, how do you square then taking the Bible of our grandmothers, the Bible of our grandfathers, that has been dipped in the academy, and now you've taken that, I'm just going to call it that, into TikTok? Tell us about that. Tell, you know what I mean? Like, how do you make sense of, because that's what you're doing.
A little bit of, I think a little bit of all of that, because it's still just come the traditions of my background, in addition to academic work, all come together in just the ways that I'm going to talk plainly about the text, not the plain text, but talk plainly about the text, meaning I'm going to make sure I define terms for folks. I was in one TikTok conversation about Deuteropauline versus Pauline, authentic Paul. And so I had to then say, all right, this is what Deuteropauline means, and this is what authentic Paul means. Now, most of us who grew up in churches, we have been taught that Paul wrote everything that says, this is Paul. And that's not necessarily true. I know you're going to clutch your pearls. It'll be okay. Calm down. And I actually have to be a much more calming and deliberate presence in that space, which I think helps me reassess how I can still be a deliberate presence in the pedagogical space of a seminary class, because I'm reminded with folks who don't have theological education, just all the things that they know from their background and what's always been said to them. So I have to reach back into same things have been said to me in my background. And as I've studied over a number of years, this is how I rework and massage. And I have to invite people, I get to invite people into reworking and massaging. And one thing that has been a beauty of the TikTok space has been the conversations within the comments. Now, that's not all the conversations within the comments, but some have been really good, especially from LGBTQIA plus siblings who have said in comments, oh my goodness, you've reworked that scripture for me so it doesn't feel like it's going to kill me. Mm-hmm. And that's been the beauty of that too. That's been the beauty of that.
Scholarship is remedy. Teaching is remedy, right? You're giving people medicine. You're giving people tools.
Yeah.
That's what we want. That's what we need.
And I also think it's pastoral. Mm-hmm. I often tell students, I pastored for 4 hot months and knew that pastoring was not my gift.
You lasted 4 months.
Yep. Lasted 4 months. And so I feel like I'm beginning to amass at least a community, an online community that is a part of a pastoral community for me, because a lot of them are rethinking scripture and thinking about, oh, perhaps I can return back to this text. Because a lot of people out in the world have said, nope, never going to read it again. Mm-mm. It's been used to head bash me. So no. And I think that realization and deliberateness, compassion, calming presence for folks, and not being the loud, being a counterbalance to some of the loud voices out in the world regarding Bible. I think that's important. And I think people need that. I actually think people are hungering for it.
So I think there's a holiness to your work, right? I think there's a sacredness to your work. And in this era of lack of clarity and bigotry and prejudice, to know that there's somebody who is intentionally being about holy work in the public space, not to dupe people, right? Not to sell them anything, but to give them tools for the reading of something sacred is marvelous. So tell our listeners how to hear you on TikTok and on social media.
Sure. So my handle is Boozy Bible Scholar. You can find me on Instagram as Boozy Bible Scholar. You can find me on TikTok as Boozy Bible Scholar. I'm getting more into a little bit of the 140 characters on Threads, but not as much as you will find on Instagram and TikTok. You will see what I've termed 1 minute womanisms that will give you about a minute, 30 seconds of some kind of womanist explanation. In addition, like I've said, scripture through womanist eyes, that's longer format content that goes through a text. And you'll also hopefully pick up a few eyeshadow techniques.
Thank you so much, Angela Parker. This has been a marvelous conversation.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
To our listeners, the Wabash Center website is the place. Look on our website for information about our hybrid workshops, our writing colloquies and roundtables. On our website, you'll find information about our blogs, our journal on teaching, as well as our regranting program. A special thanks to podcast producer Rachel Mills, and the music which frames our podcast is the original composition of Paul Myrie. Wabash Center for more than 29 years is exclusively funded by Lilly Endowment Incorporated. And we are out. How was that, Paul?